Who are we? What are we made of? And why are we here? This episode, we dig deeper into how consciousness works through the fundamental components of our universe to fulfill a purpose. In ancient times, everything in the universe was believed to be made of five elements: earth, water, air, fire, and ether, also referred to as void. Some variation of these five classical elements was found in every culture of antiquity. The universe was relatively simple. Then, with the scientific revolution, through various chemistry and physics experiments, scientists discovered atoms. They concluded that the universe is not so simple after all, and it's actually composed of over 100 different types of elements. But of these elements, only two of them make up the majority of visible matter in the universe, which is about 75% hydrogen and 25% helium, the two lightest elements. All the heavier elements, which are made in the alchemical furnaces of stars and supernovae, comprise only a small fraction of a percent of our universe. And yet, many of these elements are vital for life as we know it. What about us? What are we made of? We often hear the saying that we are made of stardust, and it's true. Our bodies are comprised primarily of the four elements of life: oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen, with small amounts of calcium, phosphorus, potassium, and a few other elements. About 90% of what we are made of came from the stars that exploded billions of years ago. Can you feel that connection to the stars? In the last 100 or so years, scientists have searched even deeper into the fundamental building blocks to discover the subatomic world. Through the quantum revolution, the Standard Model of Physics was developed, giving us an array of 17 elementary particles plus their antiparticles. These include 12 fermions, the building blocks of ordinary matter, which includes 6 types of quarks and 6 types of leptons. In addition, there are 5 bosons, which are the force carriers that mediate interactions between the particles. These particles are characterized by their type, mass, charge, spin, and quantum flavor or color. But as physicists began smashing particles together at higher and higher energies, they discovered more strange particles and things became confusing again. Around the same time came quantum field theory, which said that the universe is made of fields rather than particles. These fields vibrate at different frequencies to produce the different particles and forces. In their lowest energy state, these fields have a zero-point energy, which is not zero due to quantum fluctuations from the uncertainty principle. This reintroduced the concept of the ether back in. Now, physicists didn't really like that because it brought infinities into their calculations. So they tried to ignore it with a mathematical trick called renormalization. Now, in the last few decades, various string theories have taken this concept of vibrating fields to a whole new level. They introduced the idea of hyperspace, a 10 or 11 dimensional space where everything becomes like musical notes on a cosmic violin string or membrane. It's a rather elegant and beautiful way to think of our universe. It reminds me of the ancient Pythagorean and Egyptian mystery school teachings on the laws of harmony, music, and sacred geometry that said that everything in nature and the cosmos follows these laws. Our universe is a cosmic symphony playing the music of the spheres. And according to string theories, this is likely true at the quantum levels as well. We also learned that in the last few decades, scientists have discovered that our universe is composed of much stranger things than we ever realized. Current models now focus on 3 components that make up our universe: visible matter, dark matter, and dark energy. Everything described in the Standard Model of Physics and the periodic chart are what make up the visible matter, but this only amounts to 5% of our universe, while dark matter makes up 27% and dark energy, the intrinsic energy of the vacuum, makes up the other 68% of our universe. Yet science today is so focused on just physical causes and effects that they neglect or even deny that there might be anything beyond the physical. Are we just products of physics, chemistry, biology, and psychology? Or are we more than that? What about soul and spirit? Do they exist? Do they persist after the body dies? If so, what are they? The Kabbalistic Tree of Life is a pattern that can be applied fractally at many scales, including to who and what we are. On the Tree of Life, the physical realm is only the very bottom of the tree, and there are many dimensions and planes of higher frequency beyond what our physical senses and detectors can measure. Kabbalistically, the same source energy of Ein Sof that flows through the universe also flows through us. We could equate that essence to our spirit, which is everywhere, infinite, and eternal. In all ancient mystery school traditions, soul and spirit are two distinct things. How are they different? Let's define spirit as the eternal essence that comes from source and is one with it. In this oneness state, spirit is often assigned to the top of the tree of life. Vibrationally speaking, it is the opposite end of the spectrum from the physical. The Hermetic principle of polarity says everything is dual, everything has poles, everything has its pair of opposites. But it also says that spirit and matter are but two poles of the same thing, the intermediate planes being merely degrees of vibration. This relates to Einstein's equation E equals mc squared, which says that energy, or spirit, and matter can be transformed into one another. Only in this case, spirit is at such a high frequency that we don't yet know how to physically detect it directly. What then is soul? Well, soul encompasses all the levels in between the top and the bottom of the Tree of Life. Soul is a mediator that bridges and communicates between spirit and body. It includes the functions of the mind. It allows us to become conscious of this physical experience. It also contains our individuality and personality. We could apply a modern analogy of a radio transmission. Spirit is like the broadcaster. Soul is all the radio signals that carry information at different frequencies or stations, while body is the hardware that receives the signals depending on where the dial is set. Various alchemical traditions from both East and West talked about three essentials. These are the same as spirit, soul, and body. In Western alchemy, they called them philosophical mercury, sulfur, and salt. Paracelsus, the great alchemist, initiate, and father of modern pharmacology, said this: "The soul unites the two contraries, body and spirit, and changes them into one essence." If we put these three essentials into a more modern terminology, we could call them energy, consciousness, and matter. But as suggested by physicist David Bohm, perhaps all energy, consciousness, and matter are emergent from an implicate order. They are really one thing. Perhaps, as string theories are proposing, all things are just different vibrations plucked on the strings of a cosmic symphony. Indeed, in alchemy, Kabbalah, and other mystical traditions, all these forces and elements derive from two primary generators. Alchemy calls it the fixed and the volatile. Kabbalah calls it form and force, or feminine and masculine. Taoism calls it yin and yang. Science calls it expansion and contraction. Yet these two generators, in turn, come from the one, the prima. And while it is true that all is one, when it comes to this level of density that we live in, isn't that kind of oversimplifying what life is about? Why are we here? Why did all of this come to be? What's the purpose of it? Is there a purpose? The alchemical tradition would say that we are here to master the art and science of transformation and raising vibration. That we are here to learn to harness the power of the three essentials, purify them, harmonize them, and then bring them together into a perfected form, also called the Philosopher's Stone. Kabbalah has a similar idea, but it is more specifically focused on the raising of our own soul up to higher planes of spirit and uniting with our divine source. Simultaneously, we are also here to embody spirit into the physical body and thereby elevate the vibration of the physical. Another way this is talked about is creating heaven on earth. Now, as a Kabbalist goes through the cycles of this spiritual alchemy, raising up to spirit and then bringing spirit back down into body, through the mediating vehicle of the soul, we ultimately become what is called the Adam Kadmon, or the perfected godlike human. Many ancient mystery school traditions of different lineages have similar teachings and employ a variety of methods to help us achieve such evolution and transformation. Are these just mystical teachings to give us some sense of meaning, purpose, and comfort in life? Or could there really be something to it? Are there any clues that we can gain from science to confirm any of this? Actually, yes, there is. They call our universe the Goldilocks universe because its conditions are just right for life and consciousness to thrive in it. How so? To begin with, there are over 20 fundamental constants that are perfectly tuned for life. These include things like the mass of particles, the strength of the four forces, the speed of light, the energy density of our universe, and so on. All these values lie within a very narrow range of what makes life and the universe we know possible. If just one of those numbers was tuned a little off key and fell outside that narrow range, then our universe might not exist. Stars would never have developed. Atomic elements would not have fused or bound together. The universe could have flown apart. Earth might have been flipped over or frozen too fast. DNA would never have had a chance to form, and life as we know it would be impossible. Not only is our universe in the Goldilocks zones, but so is our Earth. Earth sits at the just right distance from the sun to allow for liquid water. It has the just right weight and gravitational field to hold the atmosphere we breathe. Any smaller, and it would not hold oxygen. Any larger, it would be too poisonous for us. Earth also has the just right amount of oceans, temperature, plate tectonics, tilt of its axis, and so on, needed to host intelligent life. Not only that, but the moon is the just right size to stabilize Earth's orbit, preventing it from having too many cataclysmic changes. And the moon is also the perfect relative size and distance from the Earth to be able to fully eclipse the sun, even though the sun is massive by comparison. Equally important is the presence, position, and size of Jupiter. Due to its large gravity field, Jupiter has cleaned out our solar system from asteroids and space debris. Jupiter acted like Earth's benevolent protector, helping prevent many asteroids from hitting it. Not only is Earth in the Goldilocks zone of our solar system, but it also resides at the just right distance from the center of our galaxy. We are about two-thirds of the way out from a black hole at the center of the Milky Way. If we were much closer, we'd be scorched by the intense radiation that surrounds the center, but much farther and we'd lack the higher elements necessary to sustain life. As physicist Freeman Dyson once put it, it's as if the universe knew we were coming. Could this mean that there is intelligence behind this universe? Or is it just a lucky string of random coincidences? The idea that the universe was designed for life and consciousness according to some grand plan is what scientists call the strong anthropic principle. While the weak anthropic principle simply acknowledges the fine-tuning towards life, but says that it is by the laws of nature rather than by design. Then, of course, there is the materialist, atheistic view that dismisses the anthropic principle altogether, calling it mystical mumbo-jumbo. But the only explanation the materialists have been able to come up with for the overwhelming amount of lucky coincidences is that our universe must be just one of a vast number of universes in the multiverse. In the multiverse, they say there will be all possible tunings of universes, so the fact that our universe is tuned for life is not significant. But the multiverse ideas are not sufficient to explain away the existence of universal consciousness or intelligent source. Not only does it appear that the physical laws of our universe are finely tuned as if by design, but the very substance of physicality itself seems more like ideas than solid particles. As Werner Heisenberg, one of the founders of quantum mechanics, said, the smallest units of matter are, in fact, not physical objects. They are ideas. Another Nobel Prize-winning scientist who actually started his career as a materialist and then later changed his view is Harvard professor of biology George Wald. The results of his research brought him to the conclusion that mind has existed always as the matrix, the source and condition of physical reality. The stuff of which physical reality is composed is mind stuff. Then he hints at a purpose for it all by saying, it is mind that has composed a physical universe that breeds life, and so eventually evolves creatures that know and create. In them, the universe begins to know itself. What does all this point to? That mind or intelligent source is the architect of all existence, while matter and life are the intentional result from the ideas expressed by that mind. This is aligned with that first Hermetic principle that says, the all is mind, the universe is mental. All the phenomenal world or universe is simply a mental creation. The real question is, how does this mind create? By what mechanism? We've explored how all forms and forces emerge as fluctuations from the quantum sea, and how through the observer effect, we can collapse the waveform to manifest things out of the quantum sea. Today's standard model of physics describes these forms and forces as fermions and bosons. Fermions include all particles of ordinary matter, like quarks, electrons, neutrinos, protons, and so forth, while bosons are the force carriers that mediate interactions via the four physical forces. How does it work? It all begins in the quantum sea, which holds all memory, information, and potentials of what can come to be, while mind, eternal source, or universal consciousness, directs the creative forces. Before the beginning, all potentials, everything that could come to be, was already there as potential. These potentials were just latent, they weren't activated. In Mystery School Kabbalah, we say that before the moment of Let There Be Light and the Big Bang, everything was in darkness. It was all there already as potentials, but the lights were out. It was as if things were asleep. Imagine walking into an unexplored, pitch-black room. We can be aware and sense that things are there, but do we know what they are? No, we don't. In order to really know what they are, we must turn on the lights. Similarly, the mind of Ensof went into the darkness and sensed all these potentials. It's kind of like how in our own mind we can sense in the unexpressed depths of our being, that there is a latent potential within. In sensing, we become aware. Sentience, the ability to sense and interact, is universal. It is found at all scales, from the macrocosm to the microcosm, even down to the quantum level. Sentience is the foundation of awareness. It is an essential aspect of mind. What follows awareness? Once we become aware that something is there, what comes next? It's the will to know, to awaken and express that potential. As the will or desire bubbles up, a vibration ripples through the quantum sea. What is this bubbling up, this ripple? It's that first cause, the fluctuation in the quantum vacuum that initiated the Big Bang. The will of Ein Sof, the infinite intelligent source, the first observer, moved upon the quantum sea or the waters of the deep. This will then activates something. What does it activate? First, it activates consciousness. Second, it activates a force. Now, what do we mean by consciousness here? How is it different from awareness? It's kind of like when we're just starting to wake up from sleep. We begin coming to awareness, but our eyes are closed and it is still dark. We sense things. We become aware of ourself and our environment, but we're not fully awake and moving yet. As we start to move, we open our eyes and become conscious. Consciousness is that coming into awareness of something that is already there. Consciousness observes more actively and directly than awareness. Consciousness can also direct the will to do something, like turn on the lights. But directing the will implies something else. It implies that there is a thought or intent behind it, such as, let there be light. Now, how does this intention get carried out? Well, it requires a force, and forces are mediated through bosons. So bosons were activated, and these bosons or forces are sent out, and it causes the lights to turn on. What happens when the lights turn on? It wakes up all those potentials that were lying dormant in the darkness. We were also one of those potentials. We had to be, otherwise we couldn't have come to be. But by saying we, what do I mean? What are we? We are energy. Everything is energy. But what is energy? Well, energy is eternal. One of the laws of physics says energy cannot be created or destroyed, it can only be transformed. This means energy is eternal essence. In metaphysical terms, we call our eternal essence our spirit. We are eternal beings. We have never been born, and therefore we can never die. This is one of the core concepts of mystery school teachings. And in that spirit essence, we are all one. So in saying we're not just talking about us humans. We're talking about the universe and all its forms. We are all one. When the lights turned on, our spirit woke up and opened its eyes. Our consciousness became activated. We looked around and witnessed what was happening. The cosmos beginning to be created by Ein Sof. What happened when we saw this? It stimulated a thought in our consciousness. What thought? We thought, create me. I want to be created, meaning I want to live. I want to be a part of this creation in the physical universe. And with our thought, we reached out to Ein Sof and we shouted, create me. In doing so, we activated another force, and that force kicked off a cascade of events that adjusted the tuning of the universe so that we could be. What does this mean? While Ein Sof's will is what initiated the Big Bang and the creation of this universe, could it be that it was our will that initiated its fine tuning, which is what allows for physical forms, life, and intelligent beings to evolve. If so, then that means our thought eventually led to matter being generated. Thoughts create matter, and matter is made of fermions. But it's not just any thought. It must be coherent thought from higher consciousness, which is why it's a lot more challenging to do this from the level of consciousness most people are operating at today. But given all of this, it helps explain why the three initiates, in writing about the principle of mentalism, said that this principle explains the true nature of energy, power, and matter, and why and how all of these are subordinate to the mastery of mind. This mastery is what true mystery schools train initiates to achieve. So why did we think we wanted to be a part of this physical experience? Is there purpose to it all? To answer that, let's turn back to science for another clue. After the Big Bang, a myriad of particles and forces were ushered in from the quantum vacuum. As the universe expanded and temperatures cooled, those particles were drawn together in order to release excess energy. At first, it was matter and antimatter that drew together and then exploded into photons of light. But due to there somehow being more matter than antimatter, another example of the very fortunate fine-tuning in our universe, eventually the matter came to dominate. At that point, different types of particles then needed to bond. We often hear the saying that in the physical, opposites attract. And while that is true in some cases, it's not the whole truth. Quantum physics tells us that the things that draw together are usually of a complementary nature. First, protons and neutrons are fused together by the strong force. Both are made of quarks and are somewhat similar, but they have different charges. Next, electrons, which are very different, join the nuclei through electric attraction to create atoms. Through bonding, they are able to create more stable and balanced forms. Eventually, atoms then join to form molecules, molecules combine to form DNA, and all of it ultimately leading to life. What is this telling us? It means that we are meant to seek union or bonding with complementary others. Rather than seeking our opposite or seeking people who are just like us, we should seek to find the people who complement us. Opposites often explode in a blaze of glory like particles and antiparticles. Same-same may be comfortable, but not so stable or useful or long-lasting on its own. But with our complements, we can fortify and balance each other. We can find the synergy needed to build towards greater life. But why come into this physical experience in order to seek bonding? Didn't we come from unity already? We did. But in our original unity, everything was a homogeneous oneness. There were no distinctions, and therefore no interactions, no tension, no progression, no alchemy. Interaction leads to knowledge and understanding. We and the universe come to know ourselves through reflection and interaction with our lives and with others. Remember, even the quarks are sentient. At the quantum level, interactions are taking place all the time. Particles exchange information through those interactions and then act according to the laws of nature. Information equals knowledge. Each ripple, each interaction, and its results are recorded upon the quantum sea. In alchemy, there is a formula that rests at the core of all transformation and progression. It's called salve et coagula, which means to separate and recombine. The idea is to successfully harmonize and unite different essences in a synergistic way. The fuel of alchemy is drawn from the tension that arises between different essences. One of the goals is to harness this tension and harmonize the differences, bringing them into a perfect union. When the philosopher's stone is truly achieved, then the bond will be indestructible and based upon eternal essence. In today's terminology of quantum physics, we'd say this is about union through complementarity. This is the alchemy or transformational process taking place in our universe. From the prima of the quantum vacuum to the materia of our physical world to seeking the philosopher's stone through alchemy, the ultimate union of all these shattered pieces into a oneness that is perfect and indestructible. Kabbalah calls this tikkun, or to rectify, to heal the shattered vessels left over after the Big Bang. Each of us contains shards from those shattered vessels within, and our mission is to heal and repair the pieces in ourselves, especially within our soul, and then to help others do the same. Only when we, in our diverse forms, can reclaim our wholeness, both individually and collectively, will we then be able to rectify the shattering in our world. The healing of our world is a collective mission, yet each of us has a unique role to play in that mission. The question we should all be asking ourselves is whether we are on track with fulfilling our unique role or not. We can only answer this for ourselves, but clearly, the world desperately needs healing and has a ways to go before the vessel is repaired. We each are responsible for a part of that healing. We are not here to be the same as everyone else. We are here to be different, to express our uniqueness. It often takes quantum leaps of faith to step onto our true path of purpose and personal mastery. It requires facing challenges and feeling the grind of the different forces and aspects of life that throw us into the fire, then douse us in the water, and then bang us around a bit until we become sharp and strong as a sword. If we run from those challenges, then we miss the opportunity to become stronger. But when we face our fears and break through our inner resistance to moving forward in the direction of our dreams, that is what prepares us to fulfill those dreams. What dreams are inside you, waiting to be fulfilled? As Henry David Thoreau wrote, "Go confidently in the direction of your dreams. Live the life you've imagined." To summarize, what's the purpose of it all? Three things. Mind coming to know itself through the expression of all the potentials in their myriad forms. And finally, progression and transformation through healing and the alchemy of life until we achieve our full potential and carry out the mission that we are here for, both individually and collectively. In physics, the philosopher's stone or holy grail is to discover the grand unified theory of everything, a single equation that unifies and derives all phenomenon in our universe. I'm Dr. Teresa Bullard, and this is Mystery Teachings.